All right, let's say good morning now to Fox News reporter, former KFI reporter, and one of my very best friends in the whole wide world, Laura Ingle. Laura, welcome back to your old stomping grounds.
Well, thank you very much. It's always good to be back. Thank you, Jones.
All right, so it's hard to believe. Throughout our career, Ingle and I have had a lot of stories that we paralleled. When she was down here working for KFI, I was up north working at KGO. We both end up September 11th in New York. And then our next big assignment that we both got together was the Scott Peterson murder trial. Laura, you were there stem to stern on this one and watched it all the way from when you were covering the story for KFI in the Central Valley. Before we even get into where we are 20 years later, what's the first thing or the first word maybe that comes to mind when you think of when you got this call 20 years ago? Did you know that this story was going to be as big as it is?
Well, you know, that is something that we address in this special that is just launched today on Fox Nation, which you can get on your app. And the Fox Nation app is it looks like Netflix, which is really cool. It has a lot of specials. And there's actually a segment in this special that talks about KFI. In fact, the KFI stinger and ID is in the first part of the show, which is fun. And I talk about working at KFI and how this story comes about, and me and you, right? Just like everybody sees the picture of Lacey. It's Christmas Eve. It's Modesto. What's going on? And I went to our news director, Chris Little, and who was so great and allowed me to go up to Modesto. But when I first originally brought the story to Chris, the general idea at the time, remember, this was a missing persons case, right? This wasn't the huge story that we know that it evolved into. It was kind of a blip in the beginning for the rest of the nation. And I said, I think that this is going to be a big story. And we kind of went back and forth about it, and we talk about it in the special. And then he said, all right, let's go and see what happens. To his credit, he recognized that this could be potentially a big story, and off we went. And then it was, you know, I had a friend in Sacramento who was pregnant at the time with a similar big, large smile. And I thought, what if that was her? You know, what would I be doing? And the thing that we can do as reporters, as you and I both know, is we can hit the ground and we can get eyeballs and ears on these types of stories. And oftentimes it can help. And that's if you wear this reporter's job like a badge sometimes, because you're like, I can actually do something. And that's what I wanted to do, was to bring attention to this case to see if there was something we could do that would help.
I think that when this case finally unfolded, I know you and I have talked about this, you didn't expect the twists and turns that this case ended up having in it. You didn't expect there to be a whole affair and fishing and you know, Christmas Eve and whatever. I felt like it was a snowball that kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we're looking back at this 20 years later and saying, oh my gosh, where would Lacey Peterson be today if she had not been murdered by her husband, Scott? Where would their son, Connor, be today if he had had a life, period?
That's right. I mean, and that is such the sad part of it. And for the special, we're looking back at the case 20 years later, and a lot of people might be listening going, well, you know, he's guilty. He's in prison. You know, what are you doing? But there's a lot of legal maneuvers that are still ahead of us in this case. And a lot has changed in these last few years. His death sentence was overturned. He's been moved to Mule Creek State Prison in Ione, California, and in Gold Rush Town, of all places. But to your point, where would Lacey and Connor be today? And we took our cameras and we went back to Point Isabel Regional Park, where the bodies washed ashore. And I stood there at that shoreline, and I know you have too, and thinking about, my God, this is where they washed up. There's Brooks Island. You can see it directly across from the shoreline, and it makes sense when you're there and you're close. And you just think, gosh, he would have been, you know, 19. He would have been applying for colleges. What kind of car would he have picked? You know, he would have gone to prom. It's just the things that were so missed out. And like, I know that you and I, and anybody who's covered this case, listened to this case, followed this case, has thought about Sharon Rocha, Lacey Peterson's mother, her brother Brent, her sister Amy, all of those friends that she had, that she, you know, the way that she lived. She was a bright, bubbly person who wanted to be a mom. And you think about the lives that are lost. And when we do these types of cases, we do the case, we do the reporting, we get to the end, someone's in prison, the end. But there's a respect that I think needs to be paid for a story of this magnitude and really any missing persons case. You know, to go back and review what had happened, what may have been missed, what may be still being looked at for appeals. And, you know, and for Scott Peterson's family, I spent time with Janie Peterson. I flew down to San Diego and I spoke with Janie, who has built this huge evidence room. Think Homeland, think bulletin boards and strings and times and pictures and arrows. And we spent time in that room. She is convinced that there is an alternate theory here that has not been fully explored that will be brought up in the next round of appeals. It's about the burglary that happened across the street in and around the time that Lacey Peterson went missing on December 24th, 2002. She has a lot of, you know, she has an answer to every single point from the prosecution. I will say that. And you'll see that in that special reporter's notebook, the Scott Peterson case.
Okay, I know you've got a soundbite that you sent to us. Explain, if you could, set that up for us, because I think it's an important one.
Right. So one of the things that we did, and you and I know this from covering the trial as we did, we weren't talking to the police. I mean, we were standing outside reporting on it. We never got a chance to talk to the detectives. I finally got a chance to talk to one of the lead detectives in the case, retired Modesto police detective Al Brocchini. If you followed the case, you remember him very well. He's the one that did the interrogation of Scott Peterson that night. He's the one that was really assigned to Scott Peterson to kind of talk to him, talk about his alibi. And I finally got a chance to sit down and talk to him, and we discussed how Scott's behavior contrasted with that of Sharon Rocha, what his behavior was, what he observed, how he reacted, and what he did in his house after Lacey Peterson vanished. Listen here.
He sold her car, I mean, you know, and then he tried to sell the house fully furnished quietly. He turned the nursery into a storage unit right away. I mean, right away.
He grew up in a family where his father was Midwestern, and the Midwestern values. And one of the things was he was taught, you don't show a lot of emotion in public. That's just not the kind of people they are. And that's how he always was. That's how he was raised, and that's how he's been.
So many people have said that the Modesto police had, you know, tunnel vision. They were after Scott from the beginning.
I told Scott, I said, Scott, my job is to clear you. My job is to eliminate you as a suspect. I could eliminate a lot of people, but not him.
That is incredible for him to say, hey, it was my job to be on your side, Scott. And was whether it was that Scott didn't help himself, whether he was his own worst enemy in this investigation, which I think a lot of us believe was the case. It's interesting to see that whole innocent until proven guilty fact is exactly from where the cops say they were coming during the start of this investigation.
You are absolutely right. And it was so interesting to hear him talk about, like, he goes, I literally was trying to clear him. They wanted to clear him so they could move on, right? And that's what you see in these types of cases, that they need to clear the spouse. They need to clear the people that are closest to the victim or the person who's missing so they can move on for those other leads. Now, you know, and people... there are people that say, well, you know, they did just focus on Scott. But while Al Brocchini was working on Scott, there was another entire team of people working on the Lacey sightings, working on the burglary across the street. There were over 30 detectives and over 200 officers that worked this case from the beginning. And yes, there was a burglary right across. I mean, could you believe it? I mean, these burglars break into a house across the street from Scott and Lacey Peterson to Modesto on and around Christmas Eve, the Medina. It was the family. The family's name was Medina across the street. They go away on Christmas Eve in the morning for a couple of days to deliver presents. They come back on the 26th. The world is there. The media, the police, they walk into their house. Their house has been ransacked. Right. Oh, my God. We've been burglarized. So they go and they tell the police. All they have to do is walk across the street. And so that is an investigation that J.D. Peterson and the Peterson family still have a lot of questions about. There was a witness who saw a van out front, who saw several men out front. Janie Peterson's theory is that Lacey went for a walk. She confronted them, or she saw them, or they saw her and they panicked and something happened. That is still 20 years later being looked at. Now, I asked Al Burkini about that, and I said, is there any chance at all that there was something to do with it? And he said, 100% no. Those burglars can't keep a secret. They passed lie detector tests. They confessed. They went to jail. One of them died. They gave us the information. And he said in a chilling moment in our interview, he said, she wasn't there. She was already gone with Scott. She's already down the road and on her way to the warehouse.
That is incredible. Laura, where can people find this again? Your special is where?
So the special is called Reporter's Notebook, the Scott Peterson Case, and it is on Fox Nation, which is our streaming service at Fox News. Just go to your app and find it there, and you can download it. And I believe there's a free trial right now. You can just download it and watch it. It's only $1.99 to sign up, but you can watch it for free for the next month. And we have a lot. Oh, and Jones, I have, for the first time, an exclusive photo. We have never seen Scott Peterson. Aside from his mugshots in the last 20 years, Janie Peterson gave me a photo of a Zoom call that they had last year when he was still in San Quentin. It is the first time we have seen him, aside from a mugshot, behind bars. What he looks like now, what he looks like talking with his family, you will only see it on Fox Nation, and you'll only see it, too. I will post it later on my Instagram, at Laura Ingle TV.
All right. Sounds good. Ingle, thank you so much. Love you. Have fun.
Right.
I know it's opening Dodgers out here, but you're taking the fam to, is it the Pirates game, did I see in your text message?
Yeah, we are. We're going to take a baseball road trip. We're going to see the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Cleveland Guardians, and it's going to be a good time. I know today's a big day for you, so good luck for your Dodgers.
All right. Thanks. Bye, Ingle. Take care. Have fun on your road trip.